Hi, and welcome to The Parent Equation with me, Aisha Murray, the podcast series where working parents share their unique stories of raising a family alongside their career. From complete career changes to parental rights, from IVF to single parenting, each episode is inspiring, and I'm so grateful to all my guests for being so candid. Parenting isn't easy, but we're all in it together. So on today's episode, I'm joined by Cody Butler. Cody is a teen life coach, which is a fantastic thing as I'm about to have a teen. My oldest is 11, so I might need your services soon, Cody. So welcome on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Aisha. Appreciate you having me here today.
It's great to have you on. And Cody, you're joining us today from Sydney. So PM your time, AM my time.
Thank
you for the international angle. So let's, I think, just start off, I guess, by, I mean, obviously, teen life coach is quite a niche in coaching.
Yes.
Maybe tell us a little bit more about who you work with and what you're trying to achieve with those teenagers.
Yeah, so obviously, as a teen life coach, we work with teenagers specifically, as it says on the label, and really, the areas that we work with are confidence, motivation, self-esteem, self-worth, self-image, sort of the core underlying drivers that are really going to determine whether they're going to turn into whether they're going to reach their full potential as an adult or whether they're going to live, you know, a limited, restricted life. So yeah. I say, you know, we help teenagers develop unshakable confidence, self-esteem, motivation and self-worth to unlock their full potential to where they can literally have, be or do anything that they choose in life. So that's kind of the elevator pitch on what I do.
Okay. And how do the teenagers find you? So, I mean, I'm going to make a big assumption, but I would imagine that teenagers aren't necessarily going to be that forthcoming and say, mum, dad, grandparent, I need some coaching. I need to find that confidence. So how do they find you in the first place? How does that come about?
So obviously the clients are the parents, right? The clients ultimately are the parents. We don't market. Teenagers are children, you know, under the age of 18, obviously. Yeah. So we work with sort of 11 to 20-year-olds. So the majority of them fall into the range of children. So we focus our marketing efforts and outreach efforts on reaching parents that are struggling with their kids, basically. You know, some of the common problems that we have, the parents just really lost contact with the child. Mm-hmm. You know, not in the sense that they're in different countries and they don't know where they are, but they're, you know, they may as well be, right. A lot of times they've lost the ability to communicate with a child, and quite often a parent will come and just say, hey, I just want my kid back. Other issues could be like, you know, school refusal, which generally comes from bullying and stuff like that. So dealing with kids that have been bullied and the consequences of that. Obviously we're living in a very fickle world these days, and that, you know, self-esteem, self-worth, self body images, stuff like that, these are all issues that come up that really affect you know, the child's ability to interact effectively, a, with the family, and be with the, you know, well, their peers and society in general. So it's really helping them develop healthy body images, healthy self-esteem and stuff like that. But so to answer your question directly, we run advertisements specifically to parents, basically with saying, hey, you know, you're having problems with your teens, with problem A, B, C, and D. If you are, then these are issues that we can help resolve within your team, within your household.
Yeah, yeah. And you touched on obviously bullying there, obviously a big problem across the globe, not just in Australia or UK. That veers on to the mental health, obviously, angle.
Absolutely.
And as a coach myself, I know that that's an area I'm not qualified to deal with. So how often, potentially teenagers, do you come across that sort of fine line between coaching and needing to maybe refer them off somewhere different?
So generally speaking, like, we don't get close to that line. So really we're looking at, you know, helping with motivation, stuff like that, you know, confidence, self-esteem. So if there's real issues there, like if the child's potentially going to hurt themselves or somebody else, then that's time to pass that off. So we remain firmly on the side of coaching. And really the difference between coaching and therapy, for example, which is probably the other side that you're talking about, is therapy generally goes back into the past and deals with issues that have happened, where we don't, not that fussed with what's happened in the past. I mean, we're looking at creating a compelling future and getting whoever we're working with, getting them motivated through A, seeing a compelling future, and then B, giving them the tools, the steps and the methodology to actually access. So as soon as somebody sees that they can have, be or do what it is that they want, then we really become very future orientated, and that's really where we separate ourselves from the therapy side of things.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. And do you find that, I think we spoke a bit briefly, that obviously you've lived in various different countries around the world. Do you find that the issues teenagers are facing, so at the moment obviously in Australia, do you find they're similar the world over, or are there sort of different nuances depending on which part of the world they live in?
Yeah, so I think the Western, you know, definitely Western, like the Western society all has the same problems. So, you know, our kids these days have been dealt a really, really crappy hand of cards to play. It's like they're given a body image that's almost unobtainable under good circumstances, and then they're given a diet that makes it, but, you know, it, as if that wasn't hard enough to attain to begin with, now they're given a diet that makes it virtually impossible, and they've got to reconcile that. You know, Facebook, Instagram, stuff like that. It's like, it can be a great tool, but at the same time, it's like the problem is it presents the weekly highlight reels or the daily highlight reels of their peers' lives. So they're only seeing the positive. They're only seeing the good. And it's creating issues that, you know, inferiority issues and stuff like that. And it's like trying to live up to something that doesn't exist. So anywhere where there's social media, anywhere where there's, you know, these issues in society, yes, there's going to be the same problems. Yeah. Like, you know, we're predominantly Western based. I mean, I don't think I have any clients in the third world or anything like that. So I'm sure their challenges are different, but certainly human beings are human beings, and they have been from Julius Caesar to the Jetsons, right?
Jetsons. That is a retro reference. I like it.
Retro reference to the future. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Shows how old I am.
Well, I remember it too. So there we are. So there isn't obviously a perfect answer to this, and I'm not there yet, but I will be soon with my kids, where the social media becomes, as you say, sort of ingrained, sadly, an ingrained part of their lives.
Yeah.
I don't believe that you can just remove it, because then you have a different problem of, well, my friends are all doing this and I'm not. So that causes a different set of issues. So I suppose, what's your first piece of advice to someone like me going into this whole new world with kids growing into this age, where you can start to manage, maybe even before they have access to social media, start to manage that education around it?
So the first thing is, like, you know, I get painted with the brush quite often of, like, you know, devices bad, social media bad, stuff like that. And it's not true at all. Devices are not bad. You know, social media is not bad. I mean, obviously you're on a device and I'm on a device and we're having an enjoyable conversation via technology. You know, we're using it productively, and hopefully, you know, we will touch some people with this interview, and devices and social media and stuff like that will do good. But when it becomes, it's like anything, right? I mean, I'm not anally retentive about anything. I've got three young kids myself, and it's like, I let them eat McDonald's. I let them have Coke from time to time. I let them have ice cream from time to time. It's like excluding them from it. I learned this with Halloween, right? I didn't like Halloween. So I had a three-year-old and a one-year-old, and it's like I tried to just cut it out 1 year, and they were obsessed with Halloween for the next year, obsessed with it for an entire year. And in the end, I'm like, well, we dropped the ball there. I told my wife, I'm like, we
completely
dropped the ball
shot yourself in the foot.
I'm like, how do we just go on with 3 days of Halloween? We would have had three days of Halloween. Now we've got a year of it.
Yeah.
So I think the first thing is, you know, from the perspective of a parent, it's like, you don't want to swim against the tide and cut out social media and cut out devices and all of that stuff. What you want to do is help your teenager create aspirations that are greater than the social media, that are greater than. So I work with teens that want to be elite athletes. They want to be professional musicians. They want to be pilots in the military and stuff like that. So social media and all that stuff does not really impact them in a negative way, because they're so driven and they're so focused on something that is just bigger and better than what it is that we're faced with. At the end of the day, like, people say to me, my kid's not motivated. You know, it's like, well, that's not true at all. They're motivated. They're totally motivated to get on social media. They're totally motivated to play video. They are motivated. Yeah. They're just not motivated to do the things that you want them to do.
Well, yeah.
And if you want to address that and deal with that, then what you have to do is understand, A, what is social media doing for this child? And B, what can I replace it with? So if social media is given somebody 7 out of 10 fulfillment in an area of life, and you ask them to go, you know, play in a park, which is a 2 out of 10 fulfillment for a 15-year-old or 16-year-old. It's like you're asking them to stop doing something that's a 7 out of 10 on the enjoyment scale and replace it with a 2 out of 10 on the enjoyment scale. Of course you're going to have problems. Of course you're going to, as an adult, you would give me pushback.
Yeah, of course.
as an adult, you would give me grief if I stopped you doing something for no reason, apparently, that you enjoyed and forced you to do something you didn't enjoy, of course. So the secret is really, and it's like, you know, what we do with Teen Success is we've got to get the child, the teenager, creating a compelling vision for their future.
Yeah.
And once that happens.
Yeah. I suppose it's also more maybe a generational thing, because I think we're getting a lot better now at talking to our children in a much more open two-way conversation. But I think.
Yeah.
Not necessarily last generation, but a couple of generations ago, it'd be very much seen and not heard. You know, we are the parent. We are going to tell you what we think is right for you. You will follow our rules. You'll follow our path for you. And if that doesn't work for you, then tough, because we know best. But I think now it is becoming a lot better. And I see it all the time talking to parents that we do respect our children more. We do want to hear what they have to say. They all have a very valid point to make, however young they are. And actually listening to that, I think, and tailoring our approach to what they need, as you say, using the example of the 7 out of 10, what makes them happy, what are they passionate about, and what drives them, talking to that surely is the best way to make them the best they can be ultimately,
and helping them discover that. I mean, another question that comes up often is like, well, my teenager doesn't really know what they want. It's like, well, that's fine. that's fine. Help them discover it. Ask good questions. A lot of times I'll speak with a parent that'll come to me and say, I really would like for you to work with my parent, but I just don't, with my teenager, but I just don't think they're going to engage. They're not going to be into this. They're not going to want to do this. They're not going to. And I'm like, just get them on the first call. Just get them on the first coaching session. Just trust me. Like, just, if you can get them on the first call, trust me, it'll all be good. And I end up speaking to the child and they so want to do it. They're so into it. They so want to be there. And it's like, you think this parent had such a negative view of their child. And it's like, I think as parents too, it's like, it is that children should be seen and not heard mentality to some extent. I'm the parent and you're the child. And of course there is a place for that. It's like, you are, at the end of the day, we are the parent. You know, it's like, we don't let them do whatever they want. It's like that. There does have to be parenting as well.
Yeah, there are boundaries.
So many times I see like a parent coming or parents saying, I have this, my child has this problem and this, and it's like the parents created that problem in their mind. And you get on the call with the child and they're like, they're so into it. They so want more. They so want to expand out. They so want, you know, it's like they really are into it. So it's like, I think some advice that I would have for parents really is like, don't underestimate your children. You know, don't look at them in a negative way. Give them the opportunity, you know, give them the opportunity to prove you wrong. Don't look down on them. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. It's the making up. Don't make an assumption until you've given them a chance to say what's really on their mind, what they're thinking about, I guess. And then where did your journey is obviously, because teen coach, I've said it already, is a very niche coaching area, which is brilliant. Yeah. Obviously very, very needed. Apart from having kids yourself, what brought you to that place? How did you end up being a teen coach?
Yeah, so a long time ago, I was a working musician. That was what I wanted to do. And part of being a musician is part of the income of a musician generally is teaching. Like very, very few musicians are lucky enough to make their living purely from performance. And I was no different. So a good chunk of my income came from teaching. I was a guitar player, I played guitar. And of course, the demographic that was naturally attracted to playing guitar was teenage boys.
Yeah.
That's like 90% of the people that showed up for guitar lessons were teenage boys. Mm. And, you know, jump back a few years, so like we've jumped ahead a little bit, but yeah, I was really unhappy, very depressed, long story short. And it's like, I came out of that and I wanted to start sharing with people how to get out of depression and anxiety and stuff like that. And, I wasn't having much luck with it, really. I didn't know how to market those skills. But, you know, in the intermediate, I was working as a musician, and that's where I came into contact. And I was sharing these skills with these teenagers. Mm-hmm. And I was having parents come to me saying, hey, I don't know what you're doing, but it's working. I don't know what you're doing, but it's making it's making a difference. I've never seen my teenagers so motivated. I never thought that they would practice like this. I never thought that they would be into it like this. And I don't know what you're doing, but it's working. Keep doing what you're doing. And I knew what I was doing. I knew exactly what I was doing. I never necessarily told the parents. But, you know, ultimately, it's what I just said earlier on. It's like I would give them a bigger vision. And with the teenage boys, I'd just say stuff like, look, the guitar player always gets the prettiest girl.
Is that true?
That's it. Yeah, yeah. My wife's amazing. She's beautiful. You know, and it's like, what did they want? You know, it's like what it gave them something bigger to work towards, right? Yeah. It's like, because if you have a goal, like there's a price to pay for everything.
Yeah.
You know, if you want a business, there's a price to pay. If you want to be a professional musician, there's a mm-hmm. price to pay. If you want to be whatever you want to be, there's a price to pay. But if the goal is big enough, if the end result has enough excitement associated with it, the price becomes very small.
Yeah. And it's a means to an end. You have to go through it to get to what you want. So.
And it becomes very easy. It becomes very easy to pay that price. So all these teenage boys were like, yeah, I'm going to be an amazing guitar player. So then practice became a very, very small price to pay, right? whereas previously, like if you just say, hey, you have to practice your A minor scale, you have to practice your C major scale, and this is a D chord and this is an F chord, go home and practice it. And if you haven't done it by next week, I'm telling your mum. The price to pay is massive because there's the goal is so, or the outcome is so small. Yeah, so the secret to everything is creating an outcome that's so exciting and so big and so full of what it is that you want, that the price that you have to pay to get there becomes so small that you're willing to pay it.
Yeah. Or do more for it than you maybe would have done before. You're willing to investigate opportunities to get you there that perhaps would have passed you by if you hadn't set yourself that goal.
That's exactly right. So yeah, just working with teenagers. I mean, I just kind of naturally fell into that. That's just how it came about. Really, I didn't really necessarily set out to work with teenagers,
And you've got younger kids now as well, haven't you? I think I'm not sure how old your kids are, but you've got some
young 5, 3, and 1.
Okay, so you've got little ones. How your knowledge of teenagers and your knowledge of what works with teenagers? How much of that knowledge can you impart now into your small children to set them up for later life, or is it something that you will just wait until they've got a little bit older to start sort of sharing that?
No, I'm all about prevention. Prevention is better than cure.
Yeah.
Prevention is better than cure. So little things like, it's just little things like, you know, one of the biggest requests that I get from parents, when we start working with parents, I say, What would be an, like, let's say you and I decided to work together. My first question is, let's fast forward 6 months. What would have to have happened for you to say, Aisha, that this was an amazing engagement, this was a great investment, you're really happy with what we've done, and you're going to recommend us to all your friends? What would have to happen? And so much of the time, it's something as simple as, I just want my kid to be my friend more. I just want to have a better relationship with my kid. It's as simple as that. So letting it get to the point to where the relationship is completely broken down. It's like, now we've got work to do now. It's like, can it be repaired? Absolutely. But it's like, it's going to be difficult. Both sides are going to have to want reconciliation, and you're going to have to both be prepared to deal with compromise and difficulty and tears at this point for that to happen. Whereas now it's like, just a simple example. It's like, we have dinner with no TV. We have dinner with no devices.
Yeah.
That's one rule we have in our house. We all have dinner together as a family, and there's no TV and there's no devices. And quite often, you know, excuse my language, it's a shit show. It's an absolute shit show because it's like,
well, you've got a one-year-old, so I can imagine what might be going on.
I've taken the 3-year-old from Peppa Pig. I've taken the 5-year-old from the Avengers. The 1-year-old's just screaming because that's what 1-year-olds do. But it doesn't matter. It's like, look, we're going to persevere through this, and it's like, scream all you want to scream, we're having dinner as a family.
Yeah.
And it's a heck of a lot easier to do battle with the monster while the monster's a baby than to let that monster grow into a full-grown beast and then do battle.
Very true.
You know, and I can better deal with a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old and condition them now to like scream all you want, it's not going to do you any good, we're having dinner as a family, than to have a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old in 3 different rooms on 3 different devices, trying to get them and saying, okay, we're all having dinner as a family now. They're going to be like, says you.
Yeah, I know. Well, then exactly.
make me if you feel man enough, Dad.
And they'll be taller than you, I imagine, potentially. As all these kids are not being tall enough. So it's quite different.
And it's just, that's right, Aisha. It's just little stuff. Like, it's easy for us to fall into the laziness traps that we criticize our kids for. And it's like, there are times when, you know, Sunday morning I'm laying in bed and I'm watching the iPad and it's 9 o'clock and it's a beautiful day outside. And I think, oh, you know, I could cultivate my family at this point and take us out for a day out at the park or the beach or the mountains or something like that. Or I could just follow the path of least resistance and have a veg out there on Netflix. And it's like, you know, I've got to fight the same urges at this point and cultivate what it is that I want in my family and really lead from the front. Because at the end of the day, if my oldest son is 15, I say, let's hang out. And he goes, well, you didn't want to hang out, Dad, when I was 5. You're telling me to get off the iPad and hang out with you. Well, you wouldn't get off the iPad and hang out with me when I was 5. What can you say?
Yeah, well, you've created a pattern of behavior, haven't you? You've created a pattern that, as you say, the older they get, then becomes very hard to break. And we're similar in our house. I think we're quite good at it. So where the kids aren't allowed any screen time during the week. So school days, there's no TV and no tablets allowed. And it's been like that since they were much smaller. And weekends, I let go a bit more, and it's quite nice for me. Sometimes they're occupied for a few hours on a tablet, but the weekdays, they just don't have it. And they have to do homework, play with each other, draw, read, do whatever it is. And you get some pushback, but they've done it for so long now, so many years, they just haven't had that in their lives in the week. They don't even ask. They know. They know what the answer is. They know what the expectation is and what the routine is, and that's that. Yeah. And I think, like you said, it's embedding those ideas early when they're a bit more compliant, I guess.
Yeah. What are our values as a family? Mm. What do we value as a family? It's like, because they don't value anything when they're born. They value food and sleep.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and it's like if you don't instill those values early on into your and say, okay, as a fact, this is just like the, you know, mission statement of a corporation, isn't it? Or the value statement of a corporation. What's the mission statement of this family?
Yeah.
What's the value statement of this family unit? If you have failed to instill those values into your children, then you know, can it be corrected? Yes, it can, but is it easier to
And
answering your question, as the father of a young family, and you know, it's like, yeah, I'm really aware of that, and it's difficult because they wear you down, man. It's like, I need a break sometimes. It's like, hey, just, you know, just take the phone, please. Just take the iPad, please. It's like,
but that's fine. That's fine. To your earlier point about
every now and again,
they're allowed McDonald's sometimes. They're allowed Coke sometimes. They're allowed sweets sometimes. It's fine. I'm like you. I'm not kind of a complete militant, sort of everything has to be sort of pure and natural and everything else, but it's all in moderation, isn't it? It's all in moderation. You still have a very healthy diet, for example, but having a McDonald's every few weeks is fine. It's a treat and you enjoy it. So life's too short sometimes.
Exactly. It gives you something to look forward to in moderation. You know, look, you know, I say too, like people ask me, well, you know, they make statements, like making statements are the worst things to do because they're definitive and they cut off any possibility of improvement. They say, well, it's 2021 or whatever, and kids can't X, Y, and Z these days. It's like, no. It's like, are there kids out there that are very well-rounded, have, you know, interact very well, very polite, interact well with their parents. They have a, you know, moderated amount of screen time. They're very balanced, very healthy, very, are they out there? It's like, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
So it is possible. It is possible to have those things. Is it difficult? Well, it is, but is it worth it? I mean, at the end of the day, I'll do anything for my kids to be happy. Mm-hmm. I'll do anything to have a great relationship with my kids. And it's like, does it matter that it's hard? Not really.
Mm-hmm. And we put that upon ourselves anyway, I mean, as adults. So I work with working parents, and most of the people seeking coaching are saying to me, I cannot do that. I cannot have my own business and work flexibly and raise a family. That's impossible. Other people, who does that? And I said, well, I did it. It's not easy. It's not easy. You know, I had to sacrifice security and income and everything else, but anything is possible. Anything is possible.
That's right.
It takes some hard work and some commitment, I guess. It's exactly the same with parenting.
And that's right. I mean, and in that situation, I generally correct people and say, what you actually mean is in your limited experience of the world, you've not found a way to do that yet.
Yeah.
It's like, and that's true. That's the truth. It's like in your limited, all of our experiences are limited.
Of course.
You know, of all the experiences that are available to us, we can only experience like a millionth of 1% of all of the experiences. So when people go, it's not possible, it's like, no, what you mean actually is in your limited experience of life.
Yeah.
It has not, I have not found a way. Yep. Are there other people like Aisha that have done that? Yes. So it is possible.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like possibility is a wonderful thing. Like when people make statements, they cut off the possibility of possibility, right?
Yeah.
And if there's no hope, then you're going to perish. If there's no hope, that's when you just give up.
And that's when you put those barriers up around you and just wall yourself in, basically. And then those walls get higher and higher and higher until really then you can't see over the top at all. And then you give up. And then that's when you sort of, it's hard, again, harder to break those walls down later.
Yep.
Than if you start trying to sort of peer over the parapets, maybe a bit earlier.
That's right.
When you're first thinking about it, I guess. And then, so just talk about coaching generally. So do you think because you're coaching teenagers that when they come into adulthood and later into adulthood, they will perceive coaching in a more positive and different way because obviously they've been exposed to it at a younger age?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and you know what it's like once you get exposed to the idea of coaching and the possibilities that are out there, it's like it becomes very addictive. Mm-hmm. You know, like we're all taught in school, like the whole purpose of school is to make you a soldier or worker for the corporation. That's it. It's like it doesn't benefit anybody for you to understand that you have limitless potential and you can actually do anything you want to. It doesn't benefit anybody but you.
Yeah.
It doesn't benefit the army. It doesn't benefit the corporation. Mm-hmm. You know, so when I start working with a new child, for example, I mean, the way I just introduce it, I say, hey, look, I want you to think of me like I'm the genie in the lamp. You know, like you rub the lamp and the genie comes out and says, you know, master, I'm your master. You're my master. You know, I have three wishes for you. I'm like, that's how I want you to think of me. I'm not like a therapist. There's nothing wrong with you. Mm-hmm. We're not here to fix you. We're here to, you know, take you from good to great or great to excellent or excellent to unbelievable, world class. Mm-hmm. And the reality is you can have anything you want. But if I asked you right now, what do you want? What would you say? And most people go, well, I definitely wouldn't want this and I definitely wouldn't want that. I'm like, yeah, you're very clear about what you don't want, but you've got no idea about what you want.
Yeah.
And even with adults, you know, it's like you say, well, what do you want? And they go, well, I don't want to feel like this. Then I ask you how you did it. Like, well, can you describe how you would like to feel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, I'll ask questions like, what are five emotions you would like to experience this week? And people go, oh, I haven't thought about that really. It's like, well, something as simple as your emotions, right? Like, you know, would you like to experience joy? Would you like to experience excitement? Would you like to experience enthusiasm? Would you like to experience passion, hope, love? What would you like to experience? And they're like, it's like, well, yeah, I'd like to experience some passion this week. I'd like to experience some joy. And then it's like, okay, well, what can we do? You know, what things in the past have allowed you to experience joy? Well, maybe we could focus a little bit more on that, on doing that this week. And it's like, it's very simple, but once people realize, hey, I have a choice. I have a choice. Mm-hmm. You know, I can choose to feel good or I can choose to feel bad. I can choose to be rich or I can choose to be poor. I can choose to be a success or I can choose to be a failure. I can choose to be happy. I can choose to be miserable. I can choose to be positive. I can choose to be, everything is a choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything's a choice. Mm-hmm. And once people realize that, you know, actually you can have anything that you want, and you know what we do, obviously that, you know, the children, you can't say, I want to be a world-class athlete. Okay, well, go be it. It's like, you know, if you can believe it, you can achieve it. So just believe it and you'll achieve it. It's like, okay, well, we got to give them very small manageable steps.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the goals really are once we are able to get some really defined goals and in areas of life that the kids haven't even thought about, you know, what's the goal for your family life? What's the goal for your what goals do you have for your relationship with your parents?
Yeah.
You know, if you ask that question to most kids and say, what's your goals for your relationship with your parents? They say, blah, 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 I don't really know. But then you start talking to them and they go, well, I just wish my dad had listened to me a little bit more. It's like, okay, that's a goal.
They've never been asked that question. I've never asked my kids that question.
Exactly right. Exactly. And it's very simple. So if someone says, my goal is, you know, now you're asking me, my goal is have my dad listen to me a little bit more. It's like, well, okay, what is a very easy, manageable step that we can take today with your father that will start you down that path? You know, and it could be as simple as just going to your dad and saying, hey, dad, you know, I'd love to have a conversation with you sometime where we listen to each other. And it's just, because until it's conceived in the mind and it's articulated with the voice, it's never going to become a reality.
Yeah. And do you think adults, I think, find it quite hard to give themselves permission to maybe articulate those goals because they think they're not allowed to think so big potentially? Do you think
absolutely?
Do you think children and teenagers find it easier to do that because maybe they're not as cynical as adults are, or is it just a human trait that we just find it hard to admit what we really want out of life?
Yeah, well, you look, I mean, there's a subset of the population that do not experience anxiety, that do not experience depression, that do not experience like zero. Do you know what that subset is? It's sort of 0 to 4, 0 to 5. And a 3-year-old does not experience depression. A 3-year-old does not experience anxiety. It's like it's zero instances of these. Yeah. You know, pandemics of Western mental health issues, zero instance in these. So we'd be very smart to look at this section and say, well, what's going on there? And there's a couple of things. One is their imagination is unhindered. Their imagination is unrestricted. That's the first thing. And as we see, you know, it's like, if you tell a 2-year-old or 3-year-old, you can be anything you want in life, they will believe that 110%.
Yeah, absolutely. And they'll say anything they want to be will come out of their head. Absolutely.
What do you want to be? Anything. You know, they'll tell you, I want to be an astronaut. I want to be an airline pilot. I want to be a fireman. I want to be a scuba diver. I want to be whatever. At 10 years old, it's going to be limited. At 20 years old, there's going to be some skepticism. At 40 years old, there's going to be lot of skepticism. If I say to a 40-year-old, you can have me or do anything that you choose in life, I'm going to get some pushback. If I say that to a 60-year-old, they're going to be angry with me. And they're going to say, you can't give me my life back. You can't change my life. Yeah, but I can stop you wasting the rest of it.
Yeah, exactly. <laughs> So
I think, you know, and in the Bible as well, I mean, it doesn't matter what your biblical beliefs are, or religious beliefs are, but Jesus picked up a 2-year-old and said, unless you can become as one of these, you will never experience the kingdom of heaven. Well, you know, what it was being said there, it was unless you can have an unrestricted imagination. You know, unless you can think in terms of what you want, not in terms. And that's the main difference, right, between a child thinking and an adult thinking. A child will tell you what they want. An adult, if you ask that question, what do you want, Aisha? You'll tell me what you want in the context of what you think is possible based on your limited experience of life.
Yeah, and what I think you want me to say.
Yeah.
What I think fits into the expectation of what you're thinking of me or what someone else thinks of me potentially.
Yeah. And the other characteristics that we see in that group, I mean, it's crazy, man. Like the physical, the way they use their body physically. Like my 3-year-old just runs everywhere, I mean, physically active. Yeah. So these are the two things. These are the two characteristics that we can see. And I can tell you, the same holds true as you get into older age groups, if you will allow yourself, right? Yeah. So if you will allow yourself to use your imagination without restriction, and if you'll use your body responsibly. So if you don't abuse it with food that we can't digest, and you don't, you know, sedate it into submission. If you're exercising on a regular basis, you're eating a good diet, and you're using your imagination in an unrestricted way, depression and anxiety and stress can't exist in that environment. I'm telling you, they can't.
And my 6-year-old spends most of her time upside down, usually with no clothes on still, randomly, but quite often you'll find it on the sofa, just upside down, legs sort of up against the wall. Now what 4-year-old adult does that?
If somebody walked into your house, Aisha, and found you hanging from the ceiling naked, like, chances are you're not depressed and suffering from stress and anxiety. It's like, you're probably in a pretty good place.
I guess so. Maybe my own special place. I don't know.
It's probably a happy place though, right? Yeah.
It would be a happy place to go to that extreme. But it's a good point though that you make, that up to a 6-year-old even, my oldest probably wouldn't do that anymore. the six-year-old is completely free. She doesn't care what anyone thinks of her doing that. She's completely happy in herself doing that. And then, as you say, you get older and older, and these pressures are put on you, these expectations are put on you. So I suppose our role as parents, and obviously the education system, et cetera, as well, but as parents, our role is to not restrict that way of thinking and not put these expectations.
Even encourage it.
Yeah.
Encourage it.
Yeah. Encourage the things that they obviously they are enjoying, encourage it more rather than saying that's not the right thing to do in this situation.
Yeah.
Allow them to explore it.
You know, it's derogatory, isn't it? It's like, you're just a dreamer. You're just a dreamer. It's like, it's a derogatory. It's like, yeah. the world was built by dreamers. We wouldn't have electricity if somebody didn't have a dream. We wouldn't have automobiles if someone didn't have that. It's like the world that we live in was constructed by dreamers.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's looked down and it's a derogatory, like people go, yeah, like I got called a dreamer in school all the time. They're like, you're just a dreamer. You need to get real. Mm. I'm like, I would prefer not to. I like my dream-like state. But we've got to encourage it. And again, like, you know, goal setting and stuff like that. I mean, because they working with the teenagers, it's like you can say, hey, set a goal. It's just another way of saying, hey, what's your dream? Let's set some dreams. Let's get some dreams going here. It's like, obviously that's not as, you know, good sounding as, you know, let's set some goals or whatever. Yeah. But it's the same thing.
Same thing. But so what happens then when you have a dreamer and that dreamer follows a dream, doesn't see it through to any extent, has a different dream, doesn't see it through, has a different dream, doesn't see it through. And this happens quite a lot, not just with children, but with adults. I've known adults people like well, this and it frustrates the hell out of me because actually they're never getting anywhere. And actually they end up maybe sponging and sort of it becomes a bit of a different issue. So yes, it's great to dream. It's great to have, you know, an open mind about all the possibilities, but I think I know the answer because we're both coaches. There has to be a path to get you to that goal and actually make it happen.
Absolutely.
It can change. It can change on the way, obviously, and it can morph into different things. But I suppose there is a limit to dreams just becoming dreams. It never amounts to anything.
Yeah, it has to be backed with a solid plan of action. So, like, one of the things that we do, like, when, you know, we'll have the kids set the goals in seven areas of life. So family, spiritual, financial goals for the future, social goals, extracurricular goals, academic goals, stuff like that. And then once they've set those goals, it's like it's narrowing it down to like, okay, well, what are the, which of those are you actually serious about? You know, there's a price to pay. Are you willing to pay a price for that? You know, so which ones are you actually willing to pay a price for? And it's like, well, then we've got it down to 5, 6, 7 goals. Then it's a case of just like, what's your next step? So at the end of the day, it's like, you know, you live in London, you can drive from London to Glasgow in pitch black with just 20 meters of light. You only need the next 20 meters of the journey and you're going to get to a destination 800 miles away or 600 miles away, however far it is. So, you know, then this is where like our industry gets a bad rap because it's like, hey, if you can believe it, you can achieve it. So if you're not achieving it, you must not be believing it. And it's like, no, it takes, if you can achieve it, you can believe it. If you can believe it, you can achieve it. I do believe that. But it's like, you then have to go to work and there has to be a solid plan. So whether it's an adult, whether it's working parents or whether it's teenagers or whether it's coaches like us or anybody really, it's like, okay, we've got to get the destination. And then we need continuously 20 meters of light. So it's like, what's your next step? You want to start a business. Okay, what's your next step? I don't know. Well, could it be get a business card? Could it be get a name, register a corporation, do whatever? It's like that there's a very clear next step in anything. And we don't, or too often we have, you know, as adults especially, we have to know every single step and we have to see every single step along the path. And if we can't see every single step, we don't take action. And it's like, no. It's like all you need is the destination. You need to know where you are and you need to know your next step. That's it. And anybody and everybody can come up with whatever you want. I don't care what it is, whatever goal you tell me, whatever dream you have, you can tell me what your next step is. You know, it only has to be this big, but you can tell me what your next step is.
And then you can celebrate that next step. Act upon it and celebrate it when you've done it.
That's right.
So before we wrap up, because we will have to soon, well, I hate wrapping up these conversations, but I just want to go back to the coaching and the sort of embedding, I suppose, embedding those the beliefs and the confidence in younger kids, even before they get to the sort of, I say, the teenage stage where they're maybe harder to fix. And again, just using myself as a point of reference, because I'm almost there. So my daughter going to senior school very soon, this end of this year, so big school with tons more kids, bigger, taller, scarier boys, girls, you know, the whole mix is going to be going on. And she's come from quite a small school, so it'll be quite a shock to her, I think, just practically speaking. So this kind of coaching, actually, what you offer, coaching a child of age 10, for example, who's on the cusp of becoming, going into that new realm of pre-teen, etc., I can see it being a hugely valuable exercise to not only look at their goals longer term, but give them confidence, as you said before, give them unshakable confidence in themselves, where they can hopefully integrate much more easily into a potentially quite a scary new situation.
That's exactly right. I mean, giving them the confidence to deal with that situation, giving them all of the skills that they need, which is going to come down to self-worth, self-image, stuff like that. Because at the end of the day, it's like peer pressure. People only submit to peer pressure because they're finding their value and their identity within the group, and they're threatened with exclusion from that group if they don't conform to the group's identity. Which is a horrific thing. I mean, they're having identity ripped from them. So if a child has their own sense of identity, and if they're able to hang on to that own sense of identity, then they're immune to peer pressure. They're immune to peer pressure, which is a great thing. Peer pressure is nothing more than just manipulation and emotional bondage. Mental slavery is all it is. It's like the peer group is trying to enslave the individual, aren't they? That's all it is.
Yeah.
Trying to get them to conform and so yeah, absolutely. Preparing a child's mind from going from junior school to middle school or middle school to high school. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, 100%. I mean, it's much better. Most of the issues that I dealt with in my life, I can trace back to my teenage years.
Yeah,
they were unresolved issues that were never dealt with in my teenage years, and they manifested themselves in the form of bankruptcy and alcohol use and drug abuse and everything else later on in life. And it's like that they easily have been dealt with when I was 14, 15, 16 years old. Something that was very easy to deal with at a young age became a massive, very challenging issue to deal with later on in life. So absolutely, any parents that are children are going through transitions, perfect for them. They should, you know, not necessarily working with us, working with anybody that can help their kid really form their identity and oblivious to the group psyche, I guess, is a way of putting it.
Yeah, and finding their own peer group of like-minded people. So if they know themselves, they'll attract people like themselves, and they'll build each other up. And as you said, hopefully the peer pressure issues will be less of an issue for them.
That's right.
Yeah. So exactly. Coming forward, thank you so much. It's been a fascinating conversation. And thank obviously you. Want to make sure that people can find you. So I'll put things in the show notes, but how can people get in touch with you or find out more about what you do with your coaching?
Yeah. So teensuccess.life is a good place to start. So that'll get you to that'll get you to our website, right? And then you can go from there. So you can find us. That's a good hub. That, you know, we're on Facebook. So I think it's called Teen Success on Facebook. You can find us there. We're always posting stuff on the website, videos, interviews like this. We try to put out pretty helpful content every week dealing with various issues that teenagers deal with and parents teenagers deal with, specifically really how to deal with a teenager. So that's teensuccess.life is a great place to start. That will get you in touch with it.
Perfect. All right. Great. Well, thank you so much for being on. And I hope actually maybe we can collaborate a bit more in the future. We'll sort of share.
100%. 100%. Yeah, that would be. Well, I have a podcast myself. So come on that.
Yes, definitely.
Come 100%. On as a guest.
Right, I will. Okay, I will. Definitely. So I look forward to that in that case, and any future collaborations we have. And I'm sure this episode will really resonate. And there's thousands of people going through exactly what you're talking about with their children. So a much needed service. So thank you so much for being on. Have a great evening for you over in Sydney. And I'll speak to you again very soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Cody. Cheers.
Thank you, Aisha.
what a fantastic episode. For those of you with tweens, teenagers, or even like me, if your kids are a bit younger, just showing us how important it is to embed that self-confidence and that unshakable belief in our kids from a young age, so that they can really carve out the right path for them, follow their passions, and become the best version of themselves they can be. So thank you again to Cody for a fantastic interview, and I'll look forward to seeing you all next time.